Do you feel your nonprofit's not getting enough in monthly recurring donations? If so, then you need sharing the credit. Every time you go into a business and swipe your debit or credit card, one of the fees taken out by Visa and MasterCard at the end of the month goes back into the system. Now, normally this is a bank, but it is legally allowed to go to a registered nonprofit. Sharing the credit worked with a small local nonprofit. They took this information to their donor base and 19 businesses started using sharing the credit. Now, this small local nonprofit receives $11,000 in monthly recurring, unrestricted, ongoing donations. This is the definition of sustainable funding. Businesses have to take plastic, so they might as well use part of those fees to support their favorite cause, your nonprofit. Check out my affiliate link in the show notes for sharing the credit. Book a call with Will Black and start your journey to more donations and better relationships today.
Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Welcome to the show. I'm sitting here with David Pisarek. David, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. I'm great. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm doing well. Sitting here in Baltimore today, a little bit of change of pace, looking at the dreary skyline and all the activity below while I'm ignoring the camera. I really want to have you on the show and get in today about some of the things that nonprofits need to know about running their website, bringing it into things like how to use it, how to be engaging, call to action, create content, all with the goal of having a purpose on every page. Dave is coming to us with a little bit of nonprofit experience. I say a little bit kind of jokingly. He's got 30 years in the industry, really doing a lot of great things in web design, generating leads, building branding projects, and being a general technical guru for nonprofits, really Canada-wide. But with all the Zoom and the digital talk and the revolution, you can connect with David no matter where you are. Really glad to have you here, David. Welcome to the show. What are we talking about today in terms of websites? I know you really want to get into that.
Thanks so much, Travis. I appreciate that intro. I've got over 20 years of experience working in nonprofits as an employee, and the last 5.5 years, coming up to 6-year anniversary of running WOW Digital, which is my agency. And we're focused on nonprofits, charities, government, community-based organizations, and really helping them drive more traffic, creating more impact, ultimately raising more money, so more donations, and getting more volunteers so they can continue to do the amazing and fantastic work they do in their communities and abroad. So in terms of, I guess, today, I think there's a few things that are important to think about and talk about. One of them is taking a look at your website that you have. How do you feel about it? Right? Is it serving the purpose of your organization? I like when I'm meeting with people and clients and prospective clients to tell them to think about their website as another employee of their organization. And I think it's important to think about it in that way.
Oh, I tend to agree. I talk to quite a few website gurus. I got a friend that every time I call, he's kind of I jokingly call him like a website snob because he is just so ingrained into all the details, the look and feel, the code, like everything. He's truly a guru. So when I come to him with whatever I've got, he's just kind of like, oh man, she's like, you know, he just kind of goes through the motions because of all the vast knowledge that he has. But I have a good friend on the other end of the spectrum who knows a lot, but he kind of just says like, it's the grunt test. Like, what is it? What's in it for me? How can I get it? And those are really great for business, but not exactly the same setup for nonprofits. So we're going to get into that a little bit. One of my biggest frustrations with a lot of nonprofit pages, like, yeah, there's a donate button when you land there, but it's hard to really understand what a nonprofit does. I don't feel like they do the best job conveying what it is that they actually do, like the value they provide. And then also that most nonprofit websites are kind of like a digital pamphlet. You can go and read through and maybe donate or not donate, but there's not a reason to go back to that website. So what are some of the things that nonprofits can do to really combat some of those things?
Travis, there's so much to unpack in everything you just said right there. That's really great. So in terms of what you're talking about the messaging, thinking about your nonprofit, a nonprofit doesn't mean no profit, right? It's a matter of, you know, how you distribute the funds versus not distribute the funds, that you're running a balance of zero unless you're building up a slush fund for whatever specific project you're trying to generate or create or run or infrastructure build or things like that. So it's really important, in my opinion, that you think of running your nonprofit as a business and function it as a business. You have employees. Hopefully you have employees. It's really hard to run a nonprofit only with volunteers, because getting people's buy-in and attention and getting them to really care about it enough, money tends to be a good motivating factor to help people really deliver on whatever their role, job, responsibilities happen to be. So hopefully, if you're listening to this, if you're a one-person show running your organization, you're running on a likely a much smaller budget. And so it's hard to get other staff involved. So you're probably working with some volunteers. But having a message when somebody lands on your website, first off, let's talk about that for a second. Somebody's landing on your website, only about 40% of your traffic is actually landing on your homepage, presuming you have a website with at least a dozen pages. Google likes to give people search results that are relevant to what it is that they're looking for. And 6 times out of 10, it's not your homepage, right? They're interested in a specific program or service that your organization offers. And so they're going to end up clicking through a Google search result that will take them to that specific page. Now, having said that, on your homepage, I think it's really key to identify the why should I care about this. So think about it from your general public's point of view. Why should I care about your organization? What is it that you do? Really, like, evoke that emotion and help steer the ship in terms of being able to let people know why they should care and what they can do about it.
People don't really understand, right? If there's any kind of confusion, especially with our very low attention span, if there's any kind of confusion, they're pretty much just hopping off your page, never to return, never to be interested in anything that you're doing ever again. So really looking for, especially startup nonprofits, to understand and potentially work with a professional like yourself and really understand what that messaging is. If I go to your website and I don't know what the heck is going on, or if you're using some kind of language that doesn't speak to me or is maybe insider speak or technically challenged, like, it's, I'm going to switch off. No kidding. Last evening, I had a friend in the nonprofit space. I'm like, can I post this and get some feedback? Absolutely. Please do. Please post your website and solicit feedback from the group. That's what groups are for. So she posted her website, went in there, dissected some of the stuff. And if you are the owner of the website or the nonprofit or the whatever, I use the owner term loosely, the founder, please understand that the feedback's not an attack on you. But if we're providing feedback, it's something that's confusing. So got her name of her organization up there, bold letters, fantastic. But the second word's an acronym. And she didn't spell out what that is. So a little bit of confusing. Plus the word itself, the acronym word, isn't a very positive word. So trying to dissect what it is. And then she used a moniker for the area that she's in that people in the area 100%, well, not 100%, but a good majority might understand exactly what she's talking about. But anyone that's not familiar with that moniker for that town has no clue where she's operating. And a few things like that. She had more than one donation page. She had a thermometer, a fundraising thermometer on some different pages, which was good for branding. But there was different amounts on each page on the thermometer and never said what it was for. So a few things in there, I'm glad she solicited feedback, but there's a few things in there that the average person looking through there aren't going to make sense. And when someone's confused, they don't buy in the business sense. And if they're confused in the nonprofit sense, they don't donate or support, whatever that might look like for you. So making sure that branding, that messaging, and the acronyms are all clear and concise, no matter what page they happen to fall on, is very important.
Yeah. One of the things that that we do and that we run with our clients is we have something that we call our Victory Program. And in that, one of the things that we talk about, it's usually a 4-session, 1 hour to an hour and 15 minutes each time. But in the second session, we talk about the audience and we talk about demographics and psychographics. And a lot of people don't really, they've heard of demographics, right? So demographics are where you live, your age, your sex, you know, how much money you earn, your interests, that type of thing. What psychographics are, is it really gets into the mindset of the person. So as you build a persona or an avatar, I'll talk about why it's important to do that in a moment, but the psychographics are like, what do they care about? What do they spend their free time doing? And things like that. And thinking about it from through that kind of lens will really help you understand how you're trying to connect with your audience. So back, I guess, to why is it important to have a persona or an avatar is it really gets you thinking outside of your own walls, your own box that your organization runs in, and you can look at it from an outsider's perspective. So if you were trying to connect with seniors in your local community, right, you would create one or two personas. You would talk about, you know, how old they are, where they live, how much money they make, if they're retired or not, what they do in their free time, and that kind of thing to really understand their core values and what they care about so that as an organization, you can tweak your messaging, you can modify your imagery, all to relate to that or those specific personas so that you can generate that interest and that involvement from them as you need or as you want. So I think it's really important from that standpoint. With regards to having acronyms or referring to a specific little region in, you know, the smallest remote city in the middle of some state or province, it has its time and place, to be honest, if that's who you're going after, right? So if you are a nonprofit focused on, I don't know, let's pick curing diabetes, right? There's going to be acronyms and you're probably going to be trying to hit up researchers and scientists and government bodies for funding and, right? So I think there's a time and place for those acronyms, but understand that you're also going to get people coming to your website that aren't familiar with that because maybe one of their loved ones or themselves, they have diabetes and they're trying to figure out, you know, what are the right alternative medicines, for example, that you might want to consider. So I think everything kind of has its time and place, but you really need to know who the demographic is and the psychographic and those personas to identify, all right, how is somebody going to perceive us when they come through this lens?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a program, let's say, that is dealing with family members of people that have mental health challenges, you might be educating on what some of those mental health challenges might be. You might be helping them understand how they can impact their day-to-day world and interact with them. And then you might be identifying who are the people that they can contact in certain types of situations. And that's going to be a different, I don't know if it's problem set, but a different idea than if you're talking to the person who actually is suffering from those mental health conditions. The messaging is going to be different. The graphics are going to be different. The way that you're talking to them is going to be different. If you're talking, marketing, and we mentioned diabetes, so immediately I picture, you know, Wilford Brimley, because you're talking to potentially an aging population. So you have someone that looks like them. This is from many years ago. I don't think Wilford Brimley is currently alive, but the people that he was speaking to on behalf of the organization were their target audience. People in that age group knew who he was, knew what he stood for, understood the things that he was talking about. And so that messaging landed very clearly with the audience that they were trying to get a hold of. What happens and where that kind of gets messed up is I deal with a lot of nonprofits that are veteran related and veteran ran, and they're looking for money. And there's nothing wrong with looking for money and being a veteran organization. However, the people that are trying to help are veterans, but also the people that they're trying to get money out of are also veterans. And I'm not saying that that veterans can't support these things, but would you ask a homeless population to financially support other homeless people? Probably wouldn't get very far. So there's a lot of messaging in veteran organizations specifically that misses the point. They have to have a different message for their people that they're trying to help. And they have to have a different message for the people that they're trying to bring together to support either interpersonally or financially, or if they're looking to get specific donors and specific companies to come on board their cause to support them financially for this outcome. And they don't really have different messages for these different types of people. Have you noticed the same thing?
Absolutely. So we conducted an audit of over 300 nonprofit and charity websites, and you would be surprised at some of the findings that we have from that. Some of the sites don't even have contact information. Like, I think there's some really bare basic necessities that websites should have. Taking a look at the messaging, making sure that it resonates, getting involvement from people that are outside of your organization. So maybe some family members or some friends be like, hey, what do you think of this? Can you check this out? Give us some feedback. Does this make sense? Right. And even as an agency, like for our website, I did that as well. I want to make sure that it makes sense, that I'm not using jargon or terminology that's like so far out there that people are like, whoa, what's happening? And they just like kind of like blank over, right? I want to make sure that everything makes sense. And I think that's true for every organization and even businesses.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's hard to know sometimes, especially if you've been in the industry. It could be the industry, the cause, whatever the thing. If you've been in it for a while, I'm in the military, and you start picking up a certain type of language or a certain type of approach, and then we forget to know who our audience actually is, right? If someone's trying to build a $1 billion organization and their avatar is someone that is caught on the treadmill of life, who comes home and sits in front of the TV, makes sure they have a fully stocked beer fridge for the weekend, and they want to charge that person $20,000 for a program, their ideals and goals and visions aren't aligned with the person that they're trying to reach, or the person they're trying to reach does not have the ability to pay the $20,000 for the program or whatever the thing is. They have to make sure all of those things are in alignment. If they're not in alignment, they're not going to be earning money in this case. And if you're not in alignment as an organization, you're not going to be getting the donations you need to build the type of programs that you want to really help solve the problem that you're trying to work towards. And so that messaging is extremely important. And we've talked about messaging in the Victory program, kind of building your avatar for demographics, psychographics. How do we actually get engagement on a website?
So there's a number of ways to do that. Understanding that it's important to know where people are landing on your page. As I mentioned earlier, probably about 40% of your traffic's actually landing on your homepage. That's a good chunk of people, right? So when they land there, what is it that you want them to do? What is the action? What is the tactic that you're going to deploy to get people to take some kind of action? Is it...
And your first thought was, I want them to donate. Yes, of course, that's every nonprofit's goal. But just getting them to donate as your goal for this particular conversation is not what we mean. But please, David, continue.
Yeah. So ultimately, it's about creating relationships, right? So what I like to talk about is a like, no trust factor, right? So typically, it'll take 7 to 8 interactions with a business or an organization before somebody will be willing to do something. So whether those interactions are on your website or through your social media channels or outreach or advertisements or whatever it happens to be, it's somewhere in the region of about 8 interactions before somebody will actually do something. Mm-hmm. Having said that, getting somebody landing on your website, great, you've got traffic there. What's the next step? You need them to do something, right? So having clear call to actions on there, it could be subscribe to your newsletter. It could be become a volunteer. It could be share this story or page or news release or article or whatever it happens to be. The call to action shouldn't always be give us money. That's not going to work. And it's not going to drive the fundraising that you're expecting it to. Everybody has really great intentions. Yes, we need money. We need $30,000 to get a wheelchair accessible van for a family, for example, right? why should anybody care about that? Like, evoke emotion, do something, tell a story, involve more than just your business and your organization. Really get to the heart of the matter. Emotions are what's going to drive people to take some kind of action and care about your cause.
Absolutely. They have to understand the need, the pain, and how they can contribute. When we talk about something like Make-A-Wish Foundation, people go and they hear about that organization. They understand that the children are there. They have some terminal condition where they're not going to reach adulthood, and depending on the severity of the condition, they might not make it the next 2 weeks. So the goal is to raise money to give the children really the experience of a lifetime. And you've got wonderful partners like John Cena, I think, has delivered more Make-A-Wish wishes than any other person. He's like about 500 or something. If you're Googling that answer right now, I really have no idea what the number is. I know he's the most. You know, like Travis, there's only 204, whatever the number is. You know, it's really easy based on the messaging that they've done and what they've created for everyone to understand exactly what's happening at the Make-A-Wish Foundation. It's easy for businesses to understand how they might play a part. It's easier for celebrities, entertainers, whatever level thing that you're doing is local police department. We have kids that want to be like a cop for a day, and people understand exactly how they can contribute no matter what level that they're at. Everything that the Make-A-Wish Foundation has done as far as messaging goes has completely hit the nail on the head. I'm not being paid to say this. This is not a paid advertisement for them, but go check out what it is that they're doing. It's very clear. It's very straightforward. No one is confused. I haven't clicked on their website in a while. I couldn't tell you exactly the user interface and what it is, but you have to be able to be clear. People need to understand their role, how they can contribute, and the best way to move forward that. They've created a fantastic narrative about who they are, what they do, and how you can help.
It's really about the brand experience, and the brand isn't just your logo. It's not just your colors or the font. It's about the content, the substance, the meat, the tone, the style of your messaging, and how that all comes through and filters through. Earlier on, I was talking about analytics and how, you know, about 40% will actually come to your website on the homepage. Take a look. If you don't have analytics, I highly recommend getting Google Analytics, whether you're pro or con on Google. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. Get some analytics on your website so that you can track what pages and what content is popular, how much time people are spending on your site, and even the user path. So they land on page X. What is it that they do next? Right. And really, by understanding who the audience is and how they're interacting with your website, it'll help you know the type of content that people are resonating with. It'll help you identify potentially what the searches are that are driving people to come to your website. Mm-hmm. And really knowing that that's the content that's working, you can start creating additional content, supplementary content related to that topic that will help drive that conversation further.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about Google Analytics, I pulled mine up in the background just to take a look. And in the last 30 days, I've got 587 users, and 300 of those have landed on my homepage. 100 of those have landed on my blog page. And it tells you exactly where they are going, and it has the source. It tells you how they got there, from what website, or did they do a search on Google? Did they find me on social media? Like, how did they get to where I'm going? And why that matters is you want to make sure that you're putting time, energy, and effort into the things that are working. But the only way to know what's working is to be able to track some of that stuff. So if I've put together all these ad campaigns and use the Google Ad Grant, check out my interview with Preston Cohen on the Google Ad Grant. But if you put together all these ads and you have a couple months and you have collected some data, you will find out if your ads are working or not. If you're spending all this time on Facebook and very little time on Instagram, but most of your traffic is coming from Instagram posts, then you would want to shift your time, energy, and effort into Instagram and maybe let Facebook go by the wayside or take down your Facebook profile or whatever you might determine is best for your situation. But you want to know what's working so you can either replicate that on other platforms, or you can focus in and put more of your advertising and budgeting money into the thing that's actually working. But you can't know what that is unless you're tracking how they got to where you are. Something I speak about quite frequently is nonprofit websites as a pamphlet. And if you need 8 interactions from someone so that they can know, like, and trust you and possibly take some kind of action with you, you have to have reasons for that interaction to happen. On my website, I have nonprofitarchitect.org, whatever my website is, nonprofitarchitect.org. I've got a blog page, and I've put in there on each blog post, I've got the show notes. I've got my audio clip for the whole episode. I've got the embedded video if you prefer to watch it. And the difference between having something like that on my webpage and not having something like that on my webpage is my web traffic has tripled since adding the blog post in there. So when people come to my website, there's something that they can engage in. If you're listening to this and you didn't know I had blog pages, now you know, and you can go back and look through content that I've produced with experts like David, teaching you exactly how to do something or how to look at a problem or how to work through something in the nonprofit world. Because we're providing that content and that value, people have a reason to come back to my website or to listen to a new podcast episode or whatever it may be. If you're in an industry and you are helping the homeless, that's fantastic. I applaud you. Good job. But if you're not helping educate the audience on what's going on, either with homeless in general, homeless in your community, what's going on for legislation on the homeless population based on what state they're in or whatever it is, why would they come back to your website? And David, what would you recommend that nonprofits do, realizing they have a million things to do? How would you recommend that they move forward in creating something like content that they need for their page?
I love this question that you've asked. Content, the saying is content is king. That's very much true. Google, your website can look absolutely fantastic, but if there's no substance there, what's really the point, right? So really, content is king. It's what's going to drive traffic to your website. Making sure your website is responsive, meaning it looks good on mobile and tablet and desktop, is part of Google's algorithm for ranking sites. But again, content is king. And if you're watching this, if you're not watching this, jump on, watch the video. Behind me on the wall is a big board with like a bunch of post-it notes on it. And this is our content calendar. And we have a content workshop that we run with some of our clients. We've been able to, just by going through this workshop, over an 8-month period, get 510 times organic search visits to their website. Just by going through this. So I guess a little pro tip here, what we do, the way we do it is we sit down, we have a probably 1.5 to 2 hour session, and we plan out the content for the entire year. So we take a look at, and we write a post-it for each bit of content, just like a rapid fire. All right, we're going to talk about this, and just do it as fast. Like, how many post-its can you do in a minute? How many post-its can you fill out in 2 minutes, right? And then we take a look at the, I guess, like awareness weeks or awareness days through the year. So if you're focused on dementia, for example, there's Alzheimer's Awareness Week, right? So what can you do? What content did you write down on a post-it note that is tied to Alzheimer's Awareness Week that you can put on the annual calendar? So what I have behind me here on the wall is I have an annual calendar. So I've got the 12 months. And then for each month, we take the post-its and go, okay, in March, we're going to talk about this. In April, we're going to talk about this. May, we're going to talk about this. And then once the month hits or the end of the current month, we'll take the post-its off of the current month up top. We'll put them on to the month view calendar and go, okay, here's what we're going to talk about on March 5th, March 7th, March 21st, whatever it happens to be. Here are the channels we're going to push it out to. It's really important to be pushing messaging out to your audience that isn't a donation ask. I cannot stress this enough. If you are going out once a year to your audience, sending out a piece of mail, I get this like every couple of weeks, sending out a piece of mail, hoping that somebody will write a check and send it back or go online and make a donation. that's the wrong approach, right? They need to be, even like a business, right? It's the number of interactions. Why should anybody care about your organization?
Why is so that really, the wrong approach?
That's what I was about to ask, or answer, actually, is it's the wrong approach because, like, what are you doing with my money? You're asking me for $100, $50, $20, $10,000, $50,000. Steward me, walk me through, explain to me how the money is being spent by creating different types of content through the entire year, pushing that out to, let's say, your email list and your social channels or whatever medium you want, maybe their ads, whatever it happens to be. You're getting the message across as to the great work that your organization is doing, how you're helping, what you're doing, what the next thing is that you're trying to do, what your three-year vision is, right? And really helping create this cloud around your organization of everything that you're doing that really will help resonate with somebody when you're going to go and ask for that donation.
Absolutely. When I talk to people in the nonprofit world about what's going on, what they're doing, this, that, and the other, I go to their social media page while I'm talking to them. And I'll scroll through and be like, I don't see any of the things that you're talking about on social media. And then I go to their website and I'll be like, I don't see any of these things that you're talking about on your website. And then usually they come back with, well, you know, who has the time to do all this? I understand that. I feel for you. I'm with you. That's one of the reasons. This is going to sound like I'm going to a podcast pitch. I love podcasting. I'm going to talk about it. I'm not trying to pitch you anything, but it's one of the reasons I love the podcast conversation so much is David and I can have a conversation and talk about all these topics, about what we're doing, how to do this, that, and the other. And then from that one conversation, I can pull out all those little pieces for social media. I've been taking notes as we're going through here. I can take a whole couple of sections about messaging. I can create an audiogram. I can take a quote and put it on a picture in Canva. We can talk about the Victory Program. We can talk about Avatar. We can have something created that talks about demographics between psychographics. We can talk about engagement on the website, what it takes to build the know, like, and trust factor. We can talk about the brand experience and talk about something like Make-A-Wish. We can talk about content creation, about Post-it notes, awareness weeks, how to create that the annual calendar, and I don't have to recreate that conversation. I take from the conversation that I've had and all those little pieces get created. So when it comes up to how to make an engaging website month on the monthly calendar, right? Yeah, you with me? I can just take all those little pieces and all that content is already created for the whole stinking month. I don't have to recreate anything. I engaged my brain for an hour-ish, and I've taken those things and created the products that are going to fill up that calendar. And it only took 2 hours between the two things to create all the products for the whole month. What a great use of my time. 2 hours to get done with all that stuff. Fantastic. Absolutely.
You know, taking that one step further, right? Let's say there's a big announcement. There's been a donation to your organization, some crazy amount, let's say $100 million, right? You can take that announcement. You can have a post about the announcement. You can have a post about the donor. You can have a post about what the funds are going to be used for, or 10 posts about what all the funds are going to be used for. And you can really create a lot of momentum and split, taking that one bit of content that you've put time and effort into and splitting it, chunking it up, creating these bite-sized quotes and snippets that are what really kind of are eaten up on social is a fantastic way to essentially like infinitely create a number of content over, or I don't know, an infinite number of content base over the course of the year, right? Now, that's not to say that doing this like content workshop, even if you do it on your own, I don't care. Hire us, don't hire us, doesn't matter. Spend the time. It's a valuable process, but there's going to be things through the year that come up, as there always is, and you're going to have to adjust things. That's why we really like using Post-it notes. You can use something like Airtable if you want it, if you're more like a digital tech person, and do it all virtually on the computer as well. But being able to have it, you can create an Excel list or Word doc bullet point, doesn't really matter. But being able to know that, okay, you can take this piece, I didn't have time this week, no problem, let's do it next week, and move pieces around, and being able to be malleable, to be able to pivot as you need to through the year.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of tools out there. I'm with a company right now and they use HubSpot. You like it or you don't like it. You pay for it, you don't pay for it. But I took 4 hours. I created 20 pieces of content that were engaging social media posts, really asking the audience about their experience in a few different areas. Those 20 posts, I then spliced up and rearranged and modified to have something go out on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter every day. We've got 5 days in the week, and I basically took 5 posts and spread them out between 2 weeks. So on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, next week was a Tuesday, Thursday, on this social media, going through all, that's 8 weeks of content. You splice it, rearrange it, sequence it. So then you've got 8 weeks of content for every social media platform. And then because of the nature of these questions, we were able to just replicate that same, basically taking a stencil and replicating it every 8 weeks throughout the rest of the year. So it took me about 4 hours, but I created and scheduled out 460 social media posts. If I wanted to, if the company wanted to, we don't have to create anything the rest of the year, right? We're going to, right? We're going to have, things are going to come up and there's things you're going to want to post extra, but we don't have to. And because we took the time to create that and share it out and it makes sense, like someone seeing your social media is going to be like, oh man, I remember when he asked that question a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to put it in my notes to take action on this thing. And then stuff happens, right? The user experience. And then they catch you on another social media platform. Like, oh, there's another reminder. This is going in my calendar. I'm setting a digital clock for the reminder to ask this question or ask my board this question. And then they forget about it again. It pops up on their stuff. Ask your board this question. They actually ask the question. Months have gone by, weeks have gone by, whatever it is. And they go, like, I'm so glad. Thank you for the reminder. I've been meaning to ask my board this and I finally did. And here's what they said. But because it's kind of spaced out, you have this spaced repetition that they get into to get them to that moment. They get all the contact points. They get all these things met. They get to a place where you've engaged with them and walk through the journey with them. And now they feel comfortable sharing with you. And once they start sharing with you, that gives you the opening to give feedback, to respond, to engage, and invite them into what it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. Right. Being able to connect with your audience, with the people that you're trying to have conversation with or bring in to your organization, even if they're not volunteering, getting them to share or like your content can be just as valuable, because then you're going to get more eyeballs on your work and your effort that you're spending your valuable time doing. And being able to free up your time, spending a couple of hours up front to generate, even if you spent an entire day, let's say you spent 7 to 8 hours, just one day, you're just going to blitz it, right? And just like destroy it. You're going to write all the content pieces, grab all the images, size them, Canva, this, that, whatever, a day and a half, 2 days, right? How much time is that going to save you through the rest of the year? How much mental and brain capacity is that going to free up where you're not worried? Oh, what am I going to post tomorrow, right? You've got it kind of sorted out. Even if you did it 1 month at a time, you spent a half hour the end of the month so you can plan like 2 months later. You never want to plan really the next month. You want to have a little bit of buffer in there. But even if you spend 20 minutes and you only plan 3 weeks or 2 weeks or 1 week, it's still worth the time and effort, because it'll just free you up and it's going to take that weight off of your shoulders.
Yeah, I fully agree. I want to circle back a little bit to the content creation piece. There's a few different ways to do that. I am obviously a fan of podcasting, but there's a few different ways to do that. There is blogs out there. There's podcasts out there. There's vlogs or straight video. And when you do these things and you post them to your website in a blog format, basically a post about something, whether you have the audio, the video, the text, or combination thereof, one of the things it does, especially in a program like Google, is it tells all the search engines every time you update your website. So anytime you post something new to your page, you are updating your website. If you go to my website, which I now remember the name, nonprofitarchitect.org, there's my blog, but I've also brought in the Veteran Podcast Network and the Nonprofit Podcast Network. I've brought in all these other sources of information, different podcasts, because that's something that I care about, right? But every time a new episode gets published by someone else, we've created some of the backend things that's going to update my website. So within a day, my website is essentially getting updated a dozen times a day. So a web search engine like Google sees that and is like, man, this guy is cranking out some serious content. I am, but I'm not doing the heavy lifting, right? Everyone else that's got permission has their input coming onto my page. They're all collectively doing a bunch of work. And the result is ViewSearch Nonprofit Architect or Nonprofit Architect Podcast, you're going to find them in the first 4.5 pages at Google and not through my own effort, through the collective effort. What might this look like for you? If you listen to my interview with Stephen Kuhn, he's going to talk about bringing on guest bloggers to either set up a feed from their blog to your page, right? Just like a news feed, like Facebook does, like any sports does, or any news organization does. Do you think Yahoo creates all that content? They don't. They just bring it in from other sources, right? So once set up and running, you have less work that you need to do. Yeah, the setup might be a little bit painful. You might have to learn some things you're not used to or good at, but he has a nonprofit website overseas. He has 250 guest bloggers that are creating content on a regular basis, populating his page, and with a few other little details, they're bringing in $200,000 a month automated. They've got about 50,000 people averaging $4 a person, $4 a person, generating $200,000 a month. Do you think that organization has the support they need, both personnel and funding, to move towards their vision? They absolutely do. They absolutely do. But don't let that thing that you need to do prevent you from doing that thing that you're trying to do.
And there's all kinds of different technologies that you can leverage to automate those types of pieces. If anybody's interested, there's Zapier, there's IFTTT, there's Integromat, there's a whole bunch of them. You can do some custom coding with XML feeds and whatever. I don't want to really jump into that tech side of it, but there's a lot of different ways that you can pull in content from other sources. Having said that, you want to also vet the sources, right? You want to make sure that they're trusted, that you're not just pulling in some random person's feed, because who knows what they're going to write about next, and that's going to automatically show up on your site and potentially cause some damage to your organization's reputation.
Yeah, you definitely want to have trusted sources. You definitely want to get permission. You don't just want to take someone's content and put it on your site. Definitely don't do that. Don't open yourself up to a lawsuit. But it takes the work out of it once it's set up. I just recently started using some of these tools within, no kidding, the last 2 months, both IFTTT, which is short for if this, then that, is if this thing happens, then we're going to do this on your behalf. And Zapier, the same type of thing. I set them up for the Veteran Podcast Network. So if you look at the Veteran Podcast Network on Facebook, the main page, you'll see that several times a day, there's new episodes being posted. Right, I had their RSS feed, the thing that they create on a hosting website that delivers their content to different platforms with their permission. I've used this thing. So every time one is published, that coding kicks in, all the back end whiz bang magic stuff that happens, and it automatically posts that to my Facebook page for the Veteran Podcast Network. So I am not taking time out of my day to every time something posts, I don't have an alert where I have to go and take it, share it, copy it, post it over. It's automatically feeding all this new stuff each and every day. And once I did the setup work, it keeps running like clockwork. And that means less work for me, more headspace, more room, all that fun stuff.
On that note, you can leverage these automated platform systems to do some other things for you as well. So something else that you could potentially do is whenever somebody mentions you on social, that it'll send you an email with a link to the post.
Talking about Google Alerts?
Store that in, let's say, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? You can have it, save it, for example, in a Google spreadsheet. So you have a list of all your mentions. So if you wanted to create some KPIs or metrics around the effort that you're doing, you can do that. Something else that we quite often set up for our clients is a Zapier rule. Whenever there's a new post to the website, that it will automatically create a MailChimp campaign with the image, the content, the excerpt, and a button that will drive people back to the actual article on the website. there's different thoughts around, you know, when you send out an email, should it have the entire article or just like a little excerpt to drive traffic back to your website? Regardless of what your thought is on that, it can all be automated. So you don't have to copy and paste and have potential human error if you make a typo in the website address that you're linking to or anything like that. Now, what I do want to say about that is I never recommend having it auto send anything. I always suggest if you have anything like that that's set up to send out via email, make sure that it's basically set as a draft. So you can go and take a look at it. You can change the messaging a little bit if you want. Sometimes when it ends up in an email, you want to alter it a little bit or put in a paragraph or something like that. And then you can schedule it to get sent out or just send it out right away.
I definitely like that. I'm going to look into that for me as well to take a little bit of workload off. If you are doing this, these sort of things, and you're having this, subscribe to your own email list, please. And then when it shows up in your email, even if you only check it like once a month, check the links to see what, if all that stuff is operating. I set up an RSS feed from my page to automatically populate a reminder email. It's like, hey, here's all the new episodes that have been published on the Veteran Podcast Network this week. Check them out. It worked. It delivered. It went well. The email looked good. I clicked on the links. And because of the way the RSS feeds were being populated, it took them to some of the text, but there was no like podcast player and it wasn't taking them to the right page on the website. So I stopped that because I found out it wasn't delivering exactly what I thought it was delivering. But I only knew that because I subscribed to my own email list and then I actually checked to see what was going on.
You always want to set it up first and put yourself on it, as you said, and do some testing with it before you really kind of like push stuff out there. I think that's very true for everything that you're doing. If you're designing your website, programming a new feature, thinking of adding a donation function, go through and test it and make sure everything's working how you want and how you're expecting so that you can fix things before it kind of looks like, oh, what are they doing over there? They don't know what they're doing, right? And really kind of showing off as like an amateur as opposed to a really strategic focused organization.
Yeah, make sure you're showing up as the professional that you are so people don't have pause for contributing to your dream and your vision and ultimately whatever the goal is that you're trying to reach for the people that you're serving. So we've talked a lot today. We've talked about a lot of different topics. We've talked about messaging, avatars, engagement, the brand and user experience, creating content, what they might look like, and then a few automation tools that might help them get them to what they need. Is this something that you do and teach on a regular basis?
I'm starting, I have started having AMA sessions. So like ask me anything sessions, kind of like an open office. You can jump in on Zoom and chat about whatever kind of digital marketing website branding issue that you want to chat about. If you're interested in jumping in on one of those, shoot me over an email. I'll get you on our list and you'll know when the next sessions are. My email is david@wowdigital.com. In addition to that, I also have a webinar that I run kind of like on an ongoing basis, usually every 4 to 6 weeks. Just go over to wowdigital.com/webinar. Travis and I were talking, I guess, right before the show. There'll be a link in the show notes page for those pieces as well. The webinar, it's a free, the webinar is free. And we talk about things about like how you can leverage your website to get more impact, more donations, and essentially like harness the power of the web.
Harness the power of the web. I'm probably going to name the show that. I'm not going to name the show that. How to harness the power of the web. I love that. Hey, David, thank you so much for being my guest today. We've already mentioned you can be reached at david@wowdigital.com and wowdigital.com/webinar to find all the great stuff that you're teaching. Do you have any last thing that you would like to share with our audience?
If you have gained anything from this episode at all, take some kind of action with it. Do something. Take one step forward. Nothing is going to happen if you just and think about it and then form a committee to talk about doing this or whatever. Take some kind of action in the next 2 days after you listen to this episode. That's my challenge.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to steer a car when it's moving than it is to try to turn the wheel when you're sitting still. Thanks again, David.
Not a problem. I appreciate being invited on here, and I hope to speak with people soon.
Absolutely. You can check out David's show notes and all the things that we do at nonprofitarchitect.org/blog for all our latest episodes.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.